covers his ministry, because all of it now builds towards that final moment in Jerusalem, that final moment in the upper room, that final moment in the garden. And in a certain way, it's both physical, but not fully a journey towards Jerusalem. It is more of a spiritual, a mental, directional facing. Jesus is starting even this early, looking towards the end. Now, some biblical scholars will say that this is why we see Jesus preparing his disciples. This is why we see him getting them ready as early as this. He is set out on a new journey. And as that new journey begins, he sends out heralds to prepare the people, to prepare the way for him as he goes towards Jerusalem. But on the way, there's this group of people called the Samaritans. And they don't get along very well with the traditional Jews. We could liken it to Hatfields and McCoys, but I think the Hatfields and McCoys was a little bit cleaner of a conversation, we'll call it that. See, Samaritans were seen by Jews as not fully Jewish. They were heretics. They were interlopers, only partially Jewish. And because they weren't fully Jewish, they were seen as not good enough to worship in the traditional holy sites like Jerusalem. So what do you do when you're not welcome? You build your own, right? Well, that's what the Samaritans did. They built their own holy areas, their own holy sites. And so in a little way, it makes it normal to consider that they are not welcoming to Jesus because he's headed to Jerusalem and they don't think Jerusalem is the holy city that traditional Jewish believers would have thought. But what we see here is less about that and more about the rejection that happens, the response to rejection. Earlier in chapter 9, we hear Jesus tell his disciples, when you are rejected, that's fine. Leave, go, shake off the dust on your feet as a testimony, and then move on. It's hard when reality smacks you in the face, isn't it, to remember what you should do. So that's what you should do, which is not what James and John want to do. James and John are like, oh, they're rejecting you, Jesus? All right, let us warm up our hands. We'll call down the hellfire and brimstone. We'll destroy these cities. You don't think that some of that prior back history might be playing some role with the disciples in this? That backstory, that animosity that existed? Could we ask if this was a Jewish town, if they would be responding with such vitriol and hatred? Probably not. But it's so quick that they are turning from what Jesus said that we need to look at that. And we need to understand that this is, in a nutshell, one of the hardest parts of faith. Knowing the right thing to do, knowing the right way to be. And when life hits, following through and carrying through. It's one thing to know how you are supposed to be God's disciple. It's another thing to live it out. And here, even these two disciples are a little too human. They're letting those outside issues, their own frustrations, want them to behave in a way that Jesus literally moments before had told them not to do. They're allowing their cultural differences, their inherent prejudices, and how they had been raised to dictate their response. And Jesus rebukes them for it. He brings them back to the center, points out that they must not be part of culture, but outside to critique culture. But then we get to the three. We get to these three very, very driven new believers. Well, maybe they're not driven enough. And maybe I need to be a little more grace-filled than calling what they say to Jesus excuses. Because then we get into the weighing of excuses. Which one is valid of these three? Do we understand these three? Have we ever been in these positions? I mean, the first comes to Jesus and Jesus says, "You want to follow me? Great. But this is the reality of being my disciple. Birds have their own nests. Animals have their own home, but I don't and I won't. You must be almost itinerant in your home as you follow me. You will have no home beyond this." Jesus knows the weight of discipleship. He knows full well. We hear in his voice again and again and again talking to the disciples of the cost of what will happen. The cost of what will happen to him, but also the cost going forward to the disciples. Jesus knows what they're going to undergo. Jesus knows the treacherous journey ahead for all of them, and he's continually preparing them for it. You know, we often get incredulous when something it doesn't prepare us for something. Well, you didn't tell me it was going to be like this. If you have a friend and you're asking them to come with you somewhere and it turns out to not be where they wanted to go or what they wanted to do, they'll say that to you. "You didn't tell me it was going to be like this." And what do you say? "Well, I tried to prepare you for it, but there is really no preparing you for it." I remember sitting down with my mom after I had decided to go into ministry. Again, one of those, "You didn't prepare me for any of this." And mom, bless her heart, she did try. She did try, and she, if anyone would have known the perils and pitfalls of ministry, it was her. She had been a youth leader, an elder, and a deacon, and then a minister for more than a decade, trying to keep a homeless ministry afloat, trying to keep ministering in various financial hardships in the community. She told me that ministry was stressful, frustrating, maddening, but also fulfilling, joy-giving, etc., etc. For every good in ministry, there will be a negative that you will feel. She wanted her son to understand that it wasn't just going to be the great highs of ministry. It was going to be the lows as well. And in many ways, Jesus is having a similar conversation with this man. Understanding to tell him, it's not all going to be great days of feeding 5,000. It's going to be persecutions that come. It's going to be Pharisees challenging every word out of your mouth. It's going to be attacks on me that you're going to want to respond a certain way about. It's going to be all of this. And thankfully, Jesus does this, but I don't think this man was quite ready for what comes. I don't think he wanted the cold water that comes. But Jesus is going to be upfront about it the whole way. But then we see the next two. The first of which says, "Well, I've got to bury my father." And here's where biblical scholars get into arguments. Some will say, "Well, we don't know what condition dad's in. Dad could be 40 years old and perfectly fine in life. We also could have a dad who is dying, but we don't know." But the big question we need to ask of this person is, what happens once something happens? Is it going to be another excuse, another wait and see, another moment to kick the can down the road? When will you follow is a better question. He asks, "Let me first do this." I think the idea of dad not even being ill is a very good question to ask. I think it's one where we might laugh and remember maybe an employee or someone we know who had the same aunt die about six different times so they could get days off of work. Nobody's ever tried that one, have they? None of you, of course, right? The fact of the matter is, it's about delaying. It's about a reason why he can't follow. And the next day, once dad has passed, when dad has passed, guess what? Somebody else will be the reason he can't follow. Something else. And then we get our final person who wants to say goodbye. Great. How many goodbyes are you going to say? Is it the Midwestern goodbye, where I start at one end of the room and work my way all the way through, and then because I can't have the kids think that when I finish over here, I can't start, so I got to say goodbye. You know, if you've ever done a Midwestern goodbye, it takes hours. On a good day, it takes hours. The fact of the matter is, this man wants to say, all right, let's go. But let me say goodbye to all these people. Let me try and do this. Let me delay again. And here's the thing with delays. I remember way back when, many years ago, two good knees ago, sitting in a dugout for Ottawa Hills JV baseball team, got my catcher's gear on, had my winter coat on my shoulders because it was cold, and we're sitting in the dugout waiting on the umps. It was raining to beat the band. And the umps, this is before cell phones, are doing their best to try and figure out when the wind is going to die down, when the rain is going to lessen and stop, and when the game can be played. An hour later, when it finally just goes whoosh, and the heavens open up, the lightning comes, we had to cancel. They were going to drag that out as long as they could. They were going to try and get that game in and get that game in until they couldn't. See, that's the thing with delays. You can drag them out and drag them out and drag them out and keep them going. But there are all delays. There are reasons why you can't do something. It's hard for us to look at these three and not be somewhat sympathetic. Once in a while, we get into that same boat. We get into the same feeling of, yeah, I'll do that tomorrow. I'll put that off till tomorrow. I'll follow God and listen to that call tomorrow. And then it comes again. The next day. I'll put that off till tomorrow. I'll do that tomorrow. I'll take care of that tomorrow, God. I'll listen tomorrow. We see in these examples how quickly comfort, family, and whatever commitment you also have comes very quickly ahead of God. We see how God slowly moves down the ladder of importance and how quickly that happens. The rub here is to assess and acknowledge the problem. To both read our own stories, but not read too much. Because, brothers and sisters, why we should care is because, let's be honest, we are as much these three as these three are. Because often we have our own reasons we can't follow. I got too much on my plate. I can't do that right now. I can't. I just can't. Yeah. And then God comes, taps you on the shoulder. Hey, you said you couldn't yesterday. I'm back. Not going away. Not going to stop. You going to follow? So God keeps on tapping away. And you keep on the delay. You keep on the delay. And what ends up happening? What always ends up happening? God wins. God finally is going to get to you. Finally, that tap on the shoulder, and God will either wear you down, wear you out, or you'll finally give up and finally listen. Either way, the statement is this: Which would you rather be? Which would we as his followers rather be? The person who, when God calls and says, "Follow me," would we rather be the person who responds, "Yes, God, yes, use me. Here I am." Quote our favorite song. Or would we rather come up with another excuse, another delay, another excuse, another Midwestern goodbye, another dad who's in his 40s who's perfectly fine, and delay and delay and delay? Would we rather prioritize serving God than prioritize serving delays and excuses? Brothers and sisters, my challenge to all of us is that when God calls, we not put him on hold. When God calls, we read and listen to the text. When God calls, we answer and we follow. May we all follow and listen to his call. Amen. Brothers and sisters, let us respond to God through our gifts.